Today, it is not only Jews who see in modern Israel a sign of God's miracles still being made manifest through the Jewish people, a sign that through the Jewish people, Isaiah's prophecies are still being fulfilled. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 116, Julian and Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. On the southern end of the western wall of the Temple Mount Plaza, one can find an example of ancient graffiti, an inscription of a verse from the end of Isaiah, one which appears as part of a prediction of Jerusalem's future redemption. Isaiah said, "As one whom his mother comforteth, so will I comfort you, and ye shall be comforted in Jerusalem. And when ye see this, your heart shall rejoice, and your bones shall flourish like grass. And the hand of the Lord shall be known toward his servants, and his indignation toward his enemies." It is words from this passage, "And you shall see, and your heart shall rejoice, and your bones shall flourish like grass," that someone many centuries ago inscribed upon the wall. What inspired that person, that inscriber? What had been seen that had caused the heart to rejoice? What sight inspired the inscription? We cannot know for sure, but one very fascinating theory links those words with a moment during the reign of the Emperor Julian, who sought, it seems, to rebuild the temple. And perhaps one Talmudic passage hints to that moment, speaking of a period of hope felt by Jews in Jerusalem. Following Constantine's death in 337, a civil war engulfed the royal family, ultimately won by Constantine's son Constantius, who ruled from Constantinople. Constantius ultimately appointed his first cousin Julian, whose father Constantius had killed, to serve as Caesar in Rome, with Julian himself ultimately coming to rule the entire empire. Unlike Constantine, during whose reign Christianity became a state religion, Julian was a Hellenistic pagan and sought to restore what had come before, ultimately earning him, among Christians, the name Julian the Apostate. But Julian's intentions included not only re-enshrining paganism, but also the restoration of sacrifices, not only for himself, but also for the Jews. Simon Montefiore summarizes, quote, "Julian had never expected to rule the empire. He was just 5 when Constantius murdered his father and most of his family. Only 2 survived, Gallus and Julian. In 349, Constantius appointed Gallus as Caesar, only to behead him, partly for his inept suppression of a Jewish revolt. Yet he needed a Caesar in the West, and there was now only one candidate left. Julian, then a student of philosophy in Athens, became Caesar, ruling from Paris. Understandably, he was nervous when the unpredictable emperor summoned him. Inspired by a dream about Zeus, he accepted the imperial crown from his troops. As he marched eastwards, Constantius died, and Julian found himself ruler of the entire empire. Julian's rebuilding of the Jewish temple was not just a mark of his tolerance, but a nullification of the Christian claim to have inherited the true Israel." And Montefiore adds, "It would also win the support of the Babylonian Jews during his planned Persian War. Julian saw no contradiction between Greek paganism and Jewish monotheism, believing that the Greeks worshipped the Jewish Most High God as Zeus." End quote. These theological beliefs of Julian can be seen in a remarkable letter whose text we still have, written by Julian to the Jews around the year 362, as he set off to war with Persia. Referenced in the letter is the Jewish Nasi, patriarch, Hillel II, whom Julian calls Julius. And in the letter, Julian announces his intention to rebuild the temple and to lift the persecutory taxes levied on the Jews by Rome. Here is a section of the letter, quote, "In times past, by far the most burdensome thing in the yoke of your slavery has been the fact that you were subjected to unauthorized ordinances and had to contribute an untold amount of money to the accounts of the treasury. Of this I used to see many instances with my own eyes, and I have learnt of more by finding the records which are preserved against you. Moreover, when a tax was about to be levied on you again, I prevented it, and compelled the impiety of such obloquy to cease here, and I threw into the fire the records against you that were stored in my desks, so that it is no longer possible for anyone to aim at you such a reproach of impiety. My brother Constantius of honored memory was not so much responsible for these wrongs of yours as were the men who used to frequent his table, barbarians in mind, godless in soul. These I seized with my own hands and put them to death by thrusting them into the pit, that not even any memory of their destruction might still linger amongst us. And since I wish that you should prosper yet more, I have admonished my brother Julius, your most venerable patriarch, that the levy which is said to exist among you should be prohibited, and that no one is any longer to have the power to oppress the masses of your people by such exactions. so that everywhere during my reign you may have security of mind, and, in the enjoyment of peace, may offer more fervid prayers for my reign to the Most High God, the Creator, who has deigned to crown me with his own immaculate right hand. For it is natural that men who are distracted by any anxiety should be hampered in spirit, and should not have so much confidence in raising their hands to pray, but that those who are in all respects free from care should rejoice with their whole hearts and offer their suppliant prayers on behalf of my imperial office to mighty God, even to him who is able to direct my reign to the noblest ends according to my purpose. This you ought to do in order that, when I have successfully concluded the war with Persia, I may rebuild by my own efforts the sacred city of Jerusalem, which for so many years you have longed to see inhabited, and may bring settlers there, and together with you may glorify the Most High God therein. End quote. So Julian wrote. Here, the emperor describes his belief that the Jewish God is synonymous with one of the gods that he worships, what he calls the Most High God. And he also expresses his intention to rebuild Jerusalem and the temple, thereby refuting the belief spread by Constantine before him that the Jews had been rejected by God and replaced in Jerusalem. It seems that after this letter, Julian appointed one of his loyal men, Alypius, to begin the building of the temple. And then that construction suddenly stopped. Some accounts describe fires that took place at the Temple Mount. And if such fires occurred, it may, as historians suggest, be linked to an earthquake that struck the Holy Land around this time. While some historians today, discussing the cessation of the construction of the temple, focus on the failure of Julian to conquer Persia and his subsequent death soon after. Christian tradition saw, in this entire story, a proof that God had rejected the Jews and taken Jerusalem from them. And considering what may have been going through the minds of Jews suddenly free in Jerusalem as the construction originally went forward, we can imagine, as some archaeologists have suggested, that one Jew watching the construction take place was so moved that that Jew ultimately inscribed upon the wall of the Temple Mount Plaza the words of Isaiah, "And you will see, and your hearts will rejoice, and your bones shall flourish like grass." One of the most interesting questions relating to this episode discussed by scholars is why the rabbinic texts, including what is known as the Jerusalem Talmud, the version of the Talmud composed in the land of Israel, apparently makes no explicit mention of Julian's proposed rebuilding of the temple. But in a fascinating article written in 1897, a scholar by the name of W. Bacher points to one rabbi in the Talmud, Rabbi Acha, who, as he notes, was a contemporary of the Emperor Julian, making the following statement: "Shebeit HaMikdash atid lehibanot kodem lemalchut Beit David," that the temple will one day be rebuilt before the kingdom of the house of David is restored. Meaning, Rabbi Acha sought to insist that one need not wait for the arrival of the Messiah for the messianic redemption in order for Jews to rebuild Jerusalem and the temple. As Bacher writes after citing this passage, quote, "A contemporary of Julian cannot express more clearly his approval of the plan of rebuilding the temple of Jerusalem than is done in this sentence," end quote. This fascinating point would highlight Rabbi Acha several centuries after the fall of the Bar Kokhba revolt and many centuries before modern Zionism, emphasizing that the reclaiming of Jerusalem and all that it embodied could be sought even before the Messiah himself arrived. Following the death of Julian, Jewish rites in Jerusalem were again lost, and the Jews of that age were not able to see fulfilled in their time the words of Isaiah inscribed upon the wall. Today, it is not only Jews who see in modern Israel a sign of God's miracles still being made manifest through the Jewish people, a sign that through the Jewish people, Isaiah's prophecies are still being fulfilled. Thus, Vice President Mike Pence, speaking to the Knesset, described the miracle of Israel by referencing a verse from this very same passage in Isaiah, in which the prophet proclaims, "Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such things? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day, or shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children." Today, knowing that a country has been miraculously reborn, that Jews have indeed returned to Jerusalem and rebuilt much of it, the Isaiah inscription on the walls of the Temple Mount Plaza speaks to us, and there are two striking features about it, noted by many. First, an aspect of the inscription which I myself didn't originally notice, and of which I learned by reading an interesting discussion about it on the website Israel City Tour, there is a difference between Isaiah's original verse and the inscription. In Scripture, the prophet promises that you will see, and your heart will rejoice, and your bones will flourish like grass. The graffiti carver, however, left out the Hebrew letter chaf from one of the words, writing instead, ve'atzmotam, Kadesha Tifrachna. Not that you will see and your bones will flourish like grass, but that their bones will flourish. And perhaps the intention of the inscriber was to reference not only the Jews in the present, but also the Jews that had come before. You will see, and their bones will flourish. Perhaps the Jew that wrote this verse sought to express that when redemption comes, it is in the merit of the Jewish memory of those that came before, and that when we experience moments of redemption, those that lived in Jerusalem and those that love Jerusalem live within us. A second feature, which I reference in Bible 365, is that the inscription leaves the verse unfinished. It stops in the middle of the word, Kadesha, like grass. And the symbolism I've suggested is striking. The incomplete verse reminds us to this day that much of Isaiah's vision is only partially fulfilled. On the one hand, many of his descriptions of the eschatological age have not arrived. War has certainly not been abolished. But at the same time, there are predictions in Isaiah that have indeed come true in our time, events worthy of making our hearts rejoice when we see them. And the inscription reminds us to remember the love and loyalty of those that came before, who live through us today, to remember their dreams, to celebrate what is, and, like the Jew that wrote that inscription, to yearn for what is yet to be. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.